Hey friends, welcome to Let's Be Clear. I am Clear Cherry Reeves, and this is a podcast where we get clear, pun intended, about how to find a kingdom perspective in all things. No, really, all things. Whether it be about pursuing your dreams, finding hope in hardship, or just talking about Jesus, we will get raw and honest. I believe it will encourage you. Now, let's dig in. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Let's Be Clear. Today is special. I have my favorite guest and probably the most requested on today, my husband, Will. So in case you were doing something else, put it down because this one's going to be worth listening to. Okay, Will, I told him he was going to have to introduce himself, and he said, absolutely not. So I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about what I think about Will. He is wise, discerning, hilarious, determined as all get out, which is how we ended up back together. He is the epitome of what it means to be faithful and loyal. He's the best dad ever to Sledge Reeves, and so tenderhearted. He's an attorney, which a lot of you guys know because we think very differently. So that really allows us to have different perspectives, which is why I'm also super excited that he's on today. But welcome, Will. How excited are you? Scale 1 to 10.
A 20.
Oh,
a 20.
Okay.
Those are super kind words.
I mean them.
Got some big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
You usually should set expectations a little bit lower than that.
No, sir. We do the other way. Set expectations high. You can do it. I'm excited. No, really.
Me too.
I mean, I think I've talked about how, you know, obviously your profession is not like, oh, that's just who you are, you know, but
right.
I think it gives people a good insight that, you know, it takes a tenacious, determined, passionate, detail-oriented, which I'm maybe not so detail-oriented person to be an attorney. But also it made our situation in the hospital unique, you know, that your perspective and just how you like our faith and how
right.
we talk to Jesus and what that looks like and then blended together in marriage, you know, what it allows for both of us to experience.
Right.
So, I really am honored. I really do mean that
I'm honored to be here.
So,
I appreciate it.
But I did want to, you know, obviously, as you know, because you are along for the journey, that The Miracle of You is coming out March 14th, and the inspiration behind it is our son, Sledge. So I kind of wanted, people know a little bit about how I felt in the hospital during that time and what that felt like for me and what God showed me. I did a podcast, if anybody's listening, a couple of episodes ago, and I'll link it in the show notes, talking just about that. And when your normal is hijacked is what it's called, because our normal was certainly hijacked. And being 26 weeks pregnant, nobody expects to deliver a child. So, but I wanted to talk about, you know, just that journey. And looking back, does it feel like it was yesterday? Or do you feel like it was forever ago?
A little of both.
Yeah.
Going deep here on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So, our normal was hijacked completely. And it was an experience that you never want. You don't want that for your child. You don't want that for yourself. But when you're in that situation, you just kind of figure it out. And I think I was just blessed to be able to figure it out with you, you know. So I'll let you guide the conversation.
I know. It's like, I mean, that's I know it's a jolting thing to talk about. You know, going back to that, I think what was really cool is, didn't you feel like, though it was really unexpected, that the Lord had kind of prepared you to be in that position? From an outsider, I'll tell you this, as your wife, you were definitely made for it, you know? I mean, how did the hospital feel to you at first,
yeah,
I guess?
I mean, I guess to answer the first question, I didn't feel prepared for it
yeah.
in that situation. Looking back on it, I have this strange appreciation for that time.
Yeah.
You know, looking back on even where we were at that point in your pregnancy. It kind of felt like we had gotten to the safe zone, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the day that you went in, well, the day he was born, you had gone in for your glucose testing.
Right.
And that was the first appointment that I hadn't been to. And I had to go to Onslow County, which is in Jacksonville, North Carolina. Or Jacksonville is in Onslow County. Sorry, I need to clarify that. But so that's about 2 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to be, it was about 8:30, 9 o'clock. I had left that morning, probably about 7.
Mm-hmm.
I had just made it to the courthouse. I was about to get out, and we were FaceTiming. You were waiting for the ultrasound tech to get in, or I think to find Sledge.
Yeah.
And you could tell something went right, and you just said, hold on, let me call you back. You know, she's going to go get Dr. Whitley.
Mm-hmm.
So I got out of the truck and started walking into the courthouse and walked through the metal detectors, and my phone started ringing. I looked down and saw wife answered, and it was Dr. Whitley. And she said that, where are you? I told her. She said, okay, you need to get home. I'm admitting clear to the hospital. And I asked her, started asking questions. You know, your head starts spinning. You start, you know, having all these thoughts run through. All these questions come to you knowing that you're probably not going to get the answers.
Right.
And asked her, are you okay? And is, you know, at that point I said, is the baby going to be okay?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you just need to get home right now. So,
you know, drove 130 miles
yeah,
an hour.
Yeah. To say the least.
Right.
You don't ever want to admit that you don't have faith, but when you get that call, it's hard not to let your mind go to all over the place.
Right.
And start thinking the worst, almost like hyperventilating, mm-hmm. so to speak. And it's, you know, it's not as tragic to look back on it now as I'm probably making it sound for obvious reasons, but putting yourself in that moment again, it's not the easiest. But, you know, getting to the hospital a couple hours later, I mean, I think the whole way home, I think I had talked to your dad, who Dr. Whitley had called. I had talked to my parents, my sister, one of my buddies. And I mean, when I say talk, I mean, they were talking and I was...
You were just trying to keep,
trying not to, you know, kill myself to get home.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing what I was walking into, and when I got there, and I laid eyes on you, you had this incredible piece about you that I'll never ever forget. At that point, we didn't really know what to expect. I think they had said that they had injected you with some steroids, you know, Dr. Whitley had, before you left her office, and she obviously got you over there real quick, despite you trying to leave, go home and clean out.
The control freak tapped in.
Trying to go do the dishes.
It's like, I'm just going to go home and
clean out your car, do the dishes, and then you'll go to take yourself to the hospital.
And, mm-hmm. I'll be back.
Yeah, typical.
Yeah.
But I think the plan was they're monitoring Sledge's heart rate, and they're going to try to keep him in there as long as possible. And then they had a team of neonatologists at Vidant basically trying to figure out what was going on.
Right.
Why hadn't he grown at all in the past, like, 3 weeks, I think it was. Because before that, when we had the anatomy scan, he was a relatively large baby is what they were saying.
Yeah.
And he hadn't grown. And so they were trying to figure out, well, what's going on? And then I think they identified the problem. And then it was, okay, is it safer? Is it, you know, where can he thrive? Is it, you know, outside or is it inside? And, you know, what does that situation look like? Where's the safest place for him? And if it's outside, can we create an environment that's going to keep him alive? And it over the course of the next few hours, it went from, okay, we think we can get to, this was a Friday afternoon, and they were like, okay, we think we can get to Monday. Mm-hmm. So we got, you know, 72 hours. And then it was, well, we can probably make it to Sunday. And you know, the purpose to keep him that long was so they could get more steroids in you, so to give him help a better shot to help his lungs. And then it was, we hope we can make it till tomorrow at lunch. And I think by the next time they came in, it was, we can't wait any longer. His heart rate was dropping so fast. We can't wait any longer. We got to do an emergency C-section. We're going to start the magnesium drip. That's supposed to last 30 minutes, and then he's going to be born. And I think we were 15 minutes through the magnesium drip, and they couldn't wait any longer.
Right.
And I think that it all happened so fast. I'll never forget after they had wheeled you back to the OR, your mom and I are sitting in the triage room, and I couldn't, you know, we had talked about what his name may be. We had talked about, you know, and I didn't have a good feeling about, just because of the way things had you know, gone that far, thus far. And I was sitting there with your mom, and your mom was, you know, doing everything she could to comfort me, and it's going to be okay. And just having this feeling that he wasn't going to make it. And I, you know, you don't want to admit that, but you just don't know. I don't know anything about it other than we were just over halfway through pregnancy, and this is entirely too early to have a baby. Besides the fact that you couldn't really even see him, you couldn't really even tell that you were pregnant. So that was nerve-wracking. But I remember texting my parents, his name's going to be William Sledge Reeves, because I didn't want him. We didn't know what was going to happen when he was born, and I didn't want him to be born without a name.
Yeah. Guys, he's going to the hard places for y'all. I didn't really expect him to tell you all this story, but it's really kind of crazy to hear him talk about it.
And the next thing I know, the nurse busts in the room and starts yelling at me because I don't have my scrubs on.
He wasn't dressed.
Because apparently Dr. Whitley's really, really good at what she does.
Right. She was ready.
She can be quick.
Yes.
So
I
quickly threw on those scrubs and got down there. And I started
It was hammer
walking,
time. Sledge was coming.
That's right. I remember walking into the OR, and the first thing I hear is, what a beautiful name it is, playing in typical Clear fashion, having praise and worship music on in the OR. And about 30 people in there standing around. And the next thing I knew, he was born.
Yeah.
And then just this incredible, incredible feeling of what an idiot you are not having faith that he was going to be, that they were going to be able to get him intubated. And they got him intubated, and the OR room erupted with cheers and, you know.
But I think you did have faith, too. Like, I think, of course, it's human tendency, right? And the protector in you and the provider in you, and you're the dad. So it's, I'm not physically there, which I think is very hard. When you can't put eyeballs on somebody, I think that makes it incredibly difficult, you know, because your brain just goes crazy. Mm-hmm. But and when you first walked in, if I don't know if you remember, but immediately you were like, let's call Pastor Aaron. Let's pray. You know,
he had called us, and a voicemail that I still have on my phone today.
But that was your urgency, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's the beauty of desperation, you know, is in moments like that where you do feel like I don't, Lord, I'm a little lost on this. Mm-hmm. Surely not us. Surely not this. Surely not right now. And I think that mustard seed kicked in, you know? And you're like, Lord, I know that you're here and this feels wrong, but you don't make a mistake. So you're going to have to tap in because I'm tapping out. And that's right, okay, right. You know? But I think one thing you and I talk about a lot now, and even I see it, you do this. I know I'm adamant about doing it. If we say, I'm going to pray for you, we pray right then
right,
and there.
Right. Like, the power of prayer.
The power of prayer was truly what carried us, you know, mm-hmm. through the hospital, especially in those early days where there was so much on the line in many different ways, you know, that like looking back at that, don't you, isn't that a theme that you see consistently?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not knowing anything about what was going on, right? And the worry, seeing the worry on everyone's, you know, when I say everyone, I'm referring to like the medical professionals, you know, seeing the concern and, you know, the uncertainty in their eyes about what was going on mm-hmm. and the urgency of the whole situation. When he was born and he was breathing and his heart was beating, you know, in my ignorance, I'm great. He's here. You know, he's all 1 pound.
Well,
you know,
it's a miracle.
Yeah.
I mean.
And I was, and of course, I mean, I was excited and.
But there was
and
more
I,
to fight.
And I think I made a comment, you know, to Dr. Whitley when we were down in the, you know, in the first 30 minutes of his life, like, so what do we got, about 6 to 8 weeks in here, you know, and then, you know, knowing. And she looked at me and she was like, all right, we're about to have an anatomy lesson here and or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And she kind of was like, hey, what's 40 minus 26, bud? You know, yeah. Like that's so. And then it became abundantly clear that, hey, what you just lived for the last 5 hours is about to be your reality for the next, you know, in your head, you're thinking, okay, for the next 14 weeks, mm-hmm. right? And as a man in general, you know, all men, I think, have this sense of like wanting to solve problems, wanting to find the answer. Couple that with some of my own characteristics, I think that's probably an overdrive in that time, like, hey, what's the answer here? What are we doing? Well, analytical, but like wanting to solve those problems.
Yeah,
and you got zero control over what's going on. Couple that with the fact that you have zero knowledge of what's going on. And so, you know, the beginning, they kept telling us it's a roller coaster. It's a roller coaster. You're there. 1 minute, it's going to be, you know, it could be looking like he's going home. And the next minute, well, now we've got, you know, to do surgery or whatever, you know, the different, whatever they were going to do to try to get him back on track. And we were told, look, we had never had a baby in here not get an infection. And that's what we're most concerned about, is any type of infection and all these different terms that you have no idea what they mean or being thrown out there. Couple that with all, you know, the fact that we're new parents now,
yeah.
and we're trying to figure out, hey, now aren't we supposed to be in control of this kid's life? Aren't we supposed to be the people here helping him?
I remember talking about, Will, I need to go ahead and order this. And you said, babe, you probably have a couple months before we're gonna need that. And honestly, it was like, you know, you kind of mentally, you know, the reality before you, mm-hmm. right? But kind of just amnesia, you just forget for a moment, you know, kind of just like
right.
how we have spiritual amnesia, like, okay, the Lord, you know, they thought he was going to be born with fluid in his brain and he was here and there was no
right.
eye drops and it was a miracle. And
right.
not only did we rejoice, the medical staff rejoiced mm-hmm. and on, I know heaven did,
right.
but you know, looking back to that time, obviously, even though you know that there's like a light at the end of the tunnel,
mm-hmm.
you believe there is, right? You know, did you find it hard to process? Or I know, you know, going to work every day, and I know you would go see Sledge before, and you were so diligent about that, and every single day, and having that pattern in your head, you know, was that, like, how has that changed your faith now, I guess?
So for the longest time, you're, you know, even going back to whenever I wanted to, decided I want to go to law school, I want to, you know, do this, and that's what I wanted to do. You let that kind of define you, right? Define, like, who you are. And everyone says that everybody changes in law school, and because they change the way you think. And part of that is true. They do.
And, break that down for people. What do you mean?
Well, you might go into law school not being an analytical person.
Okay.
You know, you're really, you know.
So you're trained to find the.
Well, yeah, but you're trained to break everything down and find.
Gotcha.
The simplest way to describe it is like, hey, this is the rationale now, you know, or this is the conclusion, and you've got to find every piece of evidence to support that conclusion. Like, your foundation is built on factual and practical thinking.
Right.
And if it's not, you're going to get obliterated.
Right.
And you're not going to be good. So for, you know, 4 years in college wanting to do that, and then, you know, even after college working in pharmaceuticals, and then wanting to go back to law school and going back to law school, I mean, you're talking about 10 years total of – that's essentially the way that my brain was operating. And that carried on in whether it was school, work, you know, and in my personal life.
Right.
And then 4 years of, you know, working as an attorney after law school before – 4 or 5 years before Sledge was born. And – that's the way you're thinking. And if it's not, if you can't see it, if you can't touch it, if you can't put your hands on it, then you can't use it to make sense out of what's going on.
If there's reasonable doubt,
right.
It's not.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well,
we won't get into the jargon. Yeah. He's about to correct me right now.
Yeah. But essentially, the real and the practical part of it, you know, and I wouldn't let my mind go to the point of blending the two. Sometimes faith was this thing that, yeah, I knew you should have it, and how can you not have faith? How can you believe in God and not have faith? And I think saying that and living that are obviously two separate things, and I think I did a poor job of living that before Sledge was born.
Wow.
After Sledge was born, everything else just kind of didn't really matter.
I mean, a great perspective, know, evener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would go to work because I love what I do, and I like, you know, my job, and it gives me a sense of purpose.
And you're responsible.
But it mattered, but it didn't affect me the way that I would let it affect me before.
Yeah.
You know, if something wasn't going my way, or if I couldn't get the answer I wanted to get, or, you know, I didn't think a client was being treated fairly, I would get so upset about it and let it consume me to a point where it was probably unhealthy.
Yeah.
But realizing that your son is in the hospital fighting to breathe, you know, those things that once bothered you so much tend to kind of just roll off your back. And
well,
you had
the view from heaven, right? Where the little is little and the big should be big. And taking that into your everyday.
Yeah. And I think there are some parts, you know, through there that we kind of jumped over that got me to that point.
Yeah,
you know, like,
for sure.
You know, one of those things is, you mentioned it, you kind of hinted at it earlier, like now when we find out somebody needs prayer, it's not, okay, we'll add them into the prayer list and pray for them at night or in the morning. It's, hey, stop and pray.
Right.
Because I can't tell you how many times I had to walk out of that hospital and drive to some obscure part in the parking lot and sit in my car and just cry and I had no idea what I was, I mean, I knew why I was crying and I knew what I was crying about. Sometimes I would feel like it was because I was overwhelmed with joy, all while also being overwhelmed with fear, and then thinking to yourself, and then being in a situation where you always want to be in control and feel in control. That was confusing, but it also felt like an incredible release of relief. And what was I releasing it to? And after doing it one or two times, it became abundantly clear. It wasn't why I was releasing it or what I was releasing. It was who I was releasing it to.
Mm, that's so good.
And that I was releasing it to God.
Mm-hmm.
And through that time and through prayer, sitting there, my faith was built.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I finally realized, like, hey, you can do all the things that you can check all the boxes, so to speak. Do the right thing, be a good person, do what you're supposed to do. But if you don't actually believe in your heart and have faith in those real tough times, it's that foundation that you're building your case on is like quicksand.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The word became real for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not a real foundation.
Yeah. That's powerful.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Well, I did not know Will was going to take us to church, you guys. But really, though, I'm kind of just a little bit in shock myself, processing back and thinking about that. I was probably in the hospital. Like, did he seriously just walk out and not get me a water? And he's crying in his car. Like,
can you go to Bettini and give me some
roasted
nasty
carrots,
smelling
please?
Greek food that stinks up the whole hospital?
Oh my goodness, we couldn't eat the NICU. So, man, COVID, it was all kinds of, you know. Looking back on, and I was just thinking about it this morning, and, you know, miracle is a word that we use a lot. You know, obviously the book's called The Miracle of You, but, you know, do you feel like that's something that you had that perspective before? You know, now I feel like we really look for them. Like we expect God to be working all around us because we had the most precious thing we could ever hold, where every single day we were watching miracles happen. So now I feel like you and I are, or we try to be, miracle monitors, where that's what's on our radar. Like we are expecting God to show up, because in the most desperate moments, I mean, he carried us, you know? I mean, yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it's hard to say, like, yeah, you're looking for it. I would say less shocked. Less shocked would be the way that I would describe it.
Because he's proven himself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not like, as we say, he's proven himself.
No,
like,
no, no.
I mean, no. I mean, like, but that's the way that
is,
I think about it too.
Right?
Like, you have to, you know,
yeah.
And that's, I think that's the problem with what my mindset was. It's like that he has to prove it to us.
Yeah.
We expect him to show up. Well, you know, what do you say to the family that doesn't get to take their kid out of the NICU?
Right.
It's not any less of a, you know, there's a reason. And if that had happened to us, I'm sure that, you know, I would hope that I would be able to be sitting here and saying that I still have as much faith in, you know, God. But I don't think the journey would have been as easy. And that sounds, it's something like looking back on it, if you had told me, hey, you're going to spend 5 months in the NICU with your kid, I would have been asking why me, you know? And I'm sure the same thing about parents who don't get to take their children's home, why me? And nobody's going to ever have the answer for that. But in my situation and in our situation, And I say my situation, just my relationship with God. I think it gave that is a time that I now look back on and appreciate. Appreciate the fact that I got to go through that with you, because the person you were throughout that entire time, never wavering in your own faith, showed me a lot. I would not have been able, I wouldn't have, you know, the appreciation for that time that I have had it not been for you constantly showing up, constantly being the one to balance out my white knuckling, so to speak, when the doctors would come in and say, we're going to do this, or try to, even though you're having faith in that moment or trying to have a good perspective, you also don't lose your own characteristics of, hey, I'm going to try to do this. And I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, we are polar opposites. And
but at the same time, yeah. For me, I remember I have a very distinct memory. Sledge had something coming up. And I guess, you know, in that moment, the enemy was just really trying to get me to white knuckle. And you said, hey, like, you reminded me of the evidence. You had built altars of, look what God's done. Look how he's been faithful. And you went through a few times very specifically, because you're detail-oriented, which I'm not. I'm like, Will's like, how do you give me some, like, examples? I'm like, I don't know. I just feel blank. That's my, I'm not great at thinking about the specifics always, but, and you had collected those files in your head of this is when God's been faithful, and you were holding on to them, and you help it be a life raft for me, you know, which I think is such a powerful thing that the Lord does in marriage, but also just in friendship and family, you know, is when it's like in Ecclesiastes, when one person falls, you know, the other can pick them back up. You know, that's just such a gift. And I think there's, you know, that the hard thing is, like, tragedy is hard and heavy, and nobody would pick it, right? Mm-hmm. None of us, we all want the comfort route, right. And none of us would sign up for it. But I don't think you knew the Holy Spirit, how strong he was in you and what he had on the other side of it. Because now look what you get to talk about. You know, I know your conversations with your clients are different because you tell me they are. I know that you're, like you said, your prayer life, like how you handle situations, our marriage, the example you are to people that you have no idea about. You know, I think it's so cool. I don't know if I told you I was going to ask you this, but it just came in my head. So I'm going to ask you this question. But what's a quality of God that you feel like you trust now? Or you saw that was so evident through the NICU journey and really just in Sledge's life that you maybe, or what do you know about God now that you maybe didn't before?
It's presence. Mm. It's presence is the one that, and I, a couple years before Sledge was born, read the Dallas Willard Divine Conspiracy, and this the concept that heaven is all is not this
ethereal, yeah,
above you. It's all around you, and you just can't see it. Don't ask me to explain that book much further.
Well,
there's a lot more to that book.
Yeah.
But that the situation we were put in almost sent me on like a journey, kind of going back to what you were talking about of like looking for it.
Right.
And I think looking for it and not being as shocked when you see another miracle, but also on the flip side of that, not being discouraged when it looks like he's not there, 'cause he is still there.
Mm-hmm. I love that, his presence.
It's his presence.
Yeah. Because that changes everything, right? Mm-hmm. It's not even like, Lord, please don't put me in this storm. It's, oh, I know you're here. Okay. Well, then we're okay. Right? That is the game changer. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Right?
And when you're, you know, having the mindset before some of this happened, and getting older and realizing that God is not a punisher. Having the mindset of a traditionalist Old Testament, you know, better show up to church in a sorry dad suit and tie. I think that when bad things happen, you then tend to think, I must have done something. Mm. Or why aren't you here? Or I'm in this place because stayed out too late last night, you know, hungover, and so I can't go to God right now and pray. Going through what we went through, realizing if he's present, if he's always present, then you're always in a position, no matter what your circumstances are, to invite him in. Mm. And that's invite him in and look for, not ask why, but just ask for him to be there and to comfort you and know that there is some reason I'm not going to understand it. Mm-hmm. But that's okay.
Yeah.
Because that's where the faith kicks in, knowing that, you know, your answers may not be coming anytime soon, and that's probably for your own good.
Yeah. Yep. And the waiting room is not fun, as anyone who's listening knows, that whether it's waiting because you're in a position like this and you don't know what the end of it looks like, right? Or you're waiting on a baby, or you're waiting on a promise to be fulfilled, or you're waiting on an answered prayer of any kind, or you're just waiting on your current season to end, because it is not fun. That waiting is holy. You know, I think there's so many scriptures about waiting on God for a reason. And if we are in control of our own timelines, man, we'd be a really poor steward of what that looks like, you know, because we only see such a finite picture of what's going on. And but now, you know.
What characteristic of God?
Are you for real flipping this on me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. I knew this was going to come.
You can't drop a bomb on me and then not expect to.
No, that's fair. I actually didn't prepare for it either. So what characteristics of God now after that journey?
Characteristics that you see that picked up during that time.
Right. I think for me that he graces you for the season you're in. That he will sustain you. Because I think as a new mom, who genuinely, when I say like knew nothing, I mean, everyone knows I fly by the seat of my pants, but I mean, I knew nothing. And, you know, being in the hospital, pumping, being exhausted, trying to, you know, owning a business, trying to figure out what's important and what's not, just maintaining your roles. And then at the end of the day, asking the Lord every day, like, what if I can't make it to tomorrow? Mm-hmm. And not just knowing, okay, he will sustain me, literally experiencing him refilling what I thought would be an empty tank, and not just for myself, but to overflow. Mm-hmm. Because even from like a professional standpoint, I could see my writing take a new depth because there was a rawness that was present that I couldn't prevent. You know, I was there, and that was it.
Right.
And I think just even in our marriage, just in everything, I mean, that he sustains, you know? And it doesn't mean that you don't still pray for, just like Jesus did before he's crucified, Lord, not I will, like, take this cup from me. It doesn't mean that you're not tired and that you wouldn't maybe wish it would be shorter, but that he's still good and that he's going to sustain you. Yeah. And I think there's just a different, you approach life differently when you think, no matter what I'm going to walk through, I do know who's going to get me to the other side because I have experienced it firsthand. So, I mean, I feel like, you know,
right.
that's kind of, that helps me, which
you said that much more eloquently than I didn't
know. No.
I didn't even know what you meant when you said graces us for, I was like, whew.
No, but you know, cause looking back, it's like, gosh, how did we get up and go to the hospital at this and that?
Right.
But in the season that you're in, first off, what other choice would you have made?
Right.
You wouldn't have.
Right.
So he sustains you, and he graces you and, mm-hmm. and equips you. And so, yeah.
It's powerful.
Anyway.
That's good.
I want to make this so long, we might even have a part two. But I did want to just say, as a parent, like, you're an incredible father, which I knew you would be. But I think that it just has made you probably more present-minded because you wished to be exactly where you are for so long, you know?
Well, we both did. And that's,
you know,
I think that's the beauty of it is I learn from you, you know?
And yeah.
You, you know, you're such a natural that you have this Sledge has your smile, no doubt about it.
Here's your head.
Thank you. But the joy that he brings to everybody is so obvious. And the joy in him, and I honestly think that he gets that from you. Mm. And that's, you know, a characteristic that you have. You just bring joy to a room. And
I'm going to remind you of that later.
Yeah.
No, but
it's no
really.
It's different, though, when you walk in and, you know, Sledge sees you. He sees the joy in you, and he mirrors that.
That's really cool to hear. Thank you for that. I needed that. You didn't know I needed it, but I did. Which I think we can see the resilience that he learned all throughout his journey that he had before he was born,
man.
Right? Like, he was made for this. His name is Sledge.
Yeah.
So, the miracle of you. There will be a lot of people who are listening to this who are thinking, well, you guys are on the other side of that. You know, easy for y'all to say, what a miracle. And great. Like, you know, I get messages about that. Clear, you don't know where I am.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the midst of it. And it's not a miracle right now. But I think, you know, what we both saw and experiencing, I mean, we're navigating some, you know, things now, and parenthood and life has its unknowns, and there's always stuff, right? And that's just what we see right this second. You know, who knows what's around the bend? But I think what you said earlier about God's presence, that he's in the boat, that he's aware of whatever storm you're either currently in or what's on the horizon, and that he's trustworthy.
I think, yeah. I mean, that's, and sometimes maybe the miracle isn't what you're looking for. Right? Maybe the miracle is his presence, and it's going to show you something that you never thought you would see. And it might not be in your time, but eventually that all happened for a reason. Right? So the miracle sometimes can be subjective.
Yeah.
We want it to be objective.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not through it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to go into all the details right now, but Sledge still has his, you know, obstacles to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, though, that what we learned throughout that, you know, 5 months and, you know, there were 4 months and then had to go back to the hospital and then, you know, ended up back in the hospital again, you know, a year later. What we learned in that moment helps us, you know, and that's subjective to us, right? And every child and every family is going to have their own obstacles and hurdles to overcome. And it doesn't make them any less serious or, you know, it's just what's on their plate.
Right.
And
I love that you said that. I don't want me to interject, but I think that was one thing I struggled with in the hospital is you were seeing these kids who, I mean, they were fighting terminal illnesses, right? And we at least, you know, believed and we did get to take Sledge home, but we knew that was not the case for a lot of people. And so you feel like, how can I appropriately grieve knowing so many are carrying a burden that feels so much heavier, you know, like, but I think what you just said is so important. The weight is relative. And it's wherever you're at, if it's heavy, it's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's mercy for that. you know? You might drop before that. The miracle is his presence. And maybe it's not what you're looking for. That's so true. It's so true. I mean, that ministers to me right now. Because I think we get so fixed on something. And we're like, Lord, you're not delivering.
So white knuckling.
Yeah.
You know, and we're so bad at it. We do it all the time. And we do it daily.
Right.
You know, we're sitting here talking and I'm going to go out and start white knuckling something. You know, and forget what I said. That's why he forgives.
So how do you live with that? It's perfect closing. How do you live with the miracle mindset? How do you fight to be that same man who in the hospital, when you are like, have the revelation, God, you are here, you're at work, you got this, and you have, you're on that, right? That spiritual mountain. Yeah. How do you fight to keep that?
You gotta, well, going back to, you know, a big part of the law is context, right? So, I mean, you know, you and I talked about this the other day. You know, when you're struggling, you want to think that it's not you, right? It can't be you. And, but, you know, after, you know, realizing that it was my perspective and maybe some of the priorities I had set, were off, and, you know, then saying, okay, well, what's different? And, you know, going back to leaving the hospital and thinking you're never coming back and trying to, and you don't ever want to go back physically, but for me sometimes, and I think moving forward in the future, when I feel myself, you know, kind of the rope's getting too far away from the rock, right? And you're the boat and you start, you know, bouncing in the waves, you know, figuring out how to get back closer to that rock. And sometimes for me, that rock can be that time in the hospital, you know, putting myself back in that place mentally where realizing, hey, all these things you care about, is that what you should be caring about? Or should you be focusing on other things? Because what really matters here?
Right.
And when I can find that space, I often find that my interactions with others, my interactions with you, my relationship with Jesus, all of that is much stronger and much better when I'm in that headspace of, hey, your son's still fighting in the hospital.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, I've seen you do that. So you probably don't even realize that. I know you probably took a trip back to memory lane because you come home and you have, you were very aware of the importance of gratitude, if that makes sense. And I think you call me to that sometimes. Hey, clear, eyes up, look around, you know, like, let's look for the miracles. There are a lot of them to count. Why don't we spend our time counting those? And then in the meantime, I'm sure the Lord will be working on this other thing, you know?
I think we lose that perspective when we start focusing on, you know, the flesh.
Yeah.
You know, things, material things or, you know, achievements or what are we doing? But when you start focusing on, you know, the kingdom of God, and realizing that when you focus on that, all those other things will fall into place. And are you doing things to further his kingdom or are you doing things to further your kingdom?
Yeah, having correct order.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Very true. Yeah. Gives everything else meaning, position, and then comes your peace.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Can I have one last question?
Sure.
Ooh, yeah, you can't say no. What is God teaching you right this moment? Like,
to be a better communicator with your wife.
Solid answer. Really?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
It's no, I'm not a great communicator when it comes to, you know, our communication. And I think that when you, in my headspace, sometimes I think, well, that I can figure that out with Clear after I figure out the 100 other things that I got to figure out that day. And, you know, spending a lot of time talking all day, every day, makes me not want to talk and not communicate, probably at the time when I should be communicating the most. And I fail at that every day, but I think what we went through in the hospital, but also what we're going through, you know, since Sledge has been home, I think we just thought it was going to be so easy.
Yeah.
If he can survive in the hospital, you know.
LOL to us.
Yeah. Yeah. But when you get him home, you realize how much more communicating, you know, needs to go on between, you know, us, because just trying to be a good example for him. You think he doesn't realize what or see what's going on, but it's so obvious that he does. So I think that's what God's teaching me right now, is to try to be a better communicator with you so everything else flows much more smoothly.
Then we're better for Sledge.
That's right.
Yeah. The miracle of you. Crazy. He loves that book, by the way. You can testify that when he's reading it, his legs kick.
He does love that book. He's so pretty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it's, you know.
But, I mean, he, you know, if anyone's hung on this long, you know, I just encourage y'all to exactly what Will said. His presence is there. And maybe consider that you may not be looking technically in the right place, or just that you would just ask that he would show himself near. I mean, he desires nothing more for your life and your future than for you to realize he's in your present, right? Because that changes everything.
Amen.
So, but really, thank you for coming
on.
This was fun.
Having me.
This was a great time of communication, Will.
It was. We're done for the day right now.
Well, yeah, we're done. Okay. Check mark. There we go. No, but really just wanted to close up and let you guys know The Miracle of You does come out March 14th, just in time for Easter. Mm-hmm. So you can grab it for your little ones or even you. I honestly, sometimes you just need the simplified version. That God's love letter to you, you know, as an adult, that you are seen, and that of all the things that you will do and of all the places you'll see and all the stuff you'll experience and the miracles that surround you, if all of that is beautiful and good and holy, then what are you to him?
Yeah.
So treasured.
Sometimes
but,
it takes being a kid again.
Yeah.
Reading all these children's books.
It really is. You did that a lot in the hospital, which I think is, you know, it really is. It's humbling. And you also realize that sometimes we make it far too complex. Yeah. Amen.
Yes.
Yes.
No doubt about that.
Well, love you guys. Thank you for tuning in. And Will, we'll come back for part two. Coming, maybe not. All right. Love you guys. Have a great week.